Purim, part 5. Last year we left off with a question. Those who buy seasoned cast iron pans, how should they kosher them? So to recall, the way in which cast iron pans are used, they're very thick metal, and that's why people like using them, because there's minimal sticking, the heat diffuses very nicely, and they have this natural lubricant that could be created, and that's what's called the seasoning, I guess. Now, the problem is that if you buy a seasoned cast iron pan, that means the factory seasons it for you, which is done by heating oils at low temperatures for sustained periods of time, and the oils that they use might not be kosher. And while one would have imagined that it's pretty likely, you know, most oils nowadays are anyway vegetable oils, but the kosher agencies who have investigated have found that, in fact, there are times when actual truly non-kosher oils are used, and therefore you would need to kosher the pan. So there's two questions that we raised. Question number one was, do you have to remove the patina? Meaning to say, there's no point in buying a seasoned cast iron pan. Why would you say you have to remove it? Because if you scrub down this pan with, let's say, an abrasive brush, the entire patina will be removed. So therefore, one could argue that it should be looked at as ben, as mamashas. Anything that could be removed without too much difficulty should not be seen as part of the pan, but rather should be seen as mamashas, in which case, in order to kosher it, like we said before, for Haggalah to work, you have to remove all ben, all mamashas. So therefore, in order to kosher this pan, you'd have to remove all the mamashas, you'd have to scrub off the entire patina. That's one option. However, the CRC quotes in a piece on their website, quotes Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz as saying, no, a tremendous kula. He said that we see the patina as part of the pan. I'll read you what he wrote. The new cast iron cookware does not have to be cleaned before koshering. He reasoned that although the seasoning can be removed with soap, it is considered absorbed since the surface of the cookware exhibits no trace of the oil seasoning. Thus, the seasoning is batel into the cookware such that it can be removed with koshering. Now, this is a very big chiddush, if you ask me, because since I can scrape it right off, I would have thought this is bad. And this is basically mamashos shel iser. Let's imagine it's lard. It's lard, right? That's what this is. It's lard. Elamai, you're going to say no. They're basically saying, and you're going to say, oh, it's part of the pan, so then why do you need to kosher it at all? So they're saying this patina is comprised of two things. A, this black thing, which is pan, which is balua with blios of lard. And therefore, when you do Haggalah, you remove the blios, but the mamashas has been transformed and is a chelik of the pot. I asked Rav Willig and Rav Schechter what they thought of this, and they thought that's a very big chiddush, that the pashtus is that this is mamashas shilasir. You can't really treat it as part of the pan. Now, even if we accept the position of Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, that this black patina is part of the pan, but still needs to be koshered to get out the blios, so then you could ask another question, which is what type of koshering is necessary? So this is going to depend on whether you accept the Ramami Pana or not, as understood by the Shach. Remember, how did this patina, how was it created? By frying lard, even if liquid lard, on this pan. Now, even though it's a liquid, remember the Ramami Pano said, when is it that Haggalah works? That's when the Isser is absorbed through the medium of a liquid. But if the liquid is the Isser, like in case over here, where there's a concern that they're frying lard, so since the Isser is, there's no medium, so then you would need Libun. So here too. Now, if you did Libun, once again, then your patina would be destroyed. So here too, they were makel, And they said that even though the Shach, again, it's a Kuf, in Yardei Kuf Chaf Aleph, Sifkat and Ches, does Paskin like the Ramam Ipano, Tzadi Vav, there are others who disagree, including the Rama, the Magen Avraham, and the Chasam Sofer. And also we said that others understand the Ramam Ipano differently than the Shach, and therefore they thought that the Me'ikra Hadin, the Halacha, is Lahakel on this, against the Shach, and therefore you could kasher it with Hagala and retain that patina, which is made out of Isser.
I understand, so you're getting out the Bleos in the pot, but you still see the layer sitting there.
No, what they're, Matt, again, to me this is very big Kiddush, but what they're saying is no, that this black thing, even though it came through frying Isser, now appears to be part of the pot. Because when you look at the pot and you touch the pot, even with this patina, it doesn't seem like something separate. If you got one of these seasoned cast iron pans and you opened it up the box and you looked at it, to you, it would look like a Teflon frying pan, right? So we would see it not as, again, what they were arguing is not as a pan plus mamashas on it, but just a pan. Now, the problem is the pan is clearly balua biblio shalisser, because it's actually made out of isser, so it certainly is balua biblio shalisser. So those blios must be removed, but subsequently it could be kashered, right?
Is it no same pan?
No, because the Haggalah will get out all blios from the pan.
Even the layer that remains won't be nothing
pan. That's what they're assuming. Again, that's what Rav Willig and Rav Schachter questioned. They said, no, since this could be removed, it's mamashas, it's not pan. Once it's an interesting point. In other words, let's say you took a piece of chazer and you dried it out and removed all moisture and you turned it into a pot. Is that a kosher pot? So, right. So that's essentially the type of model they're saying. They're saying, well, if you take meat and it's yavish ke'etz and the like, so then there was the whole question, well, what about if it remoistens? But here, let's say it doesn't get remoistened, right? You mamish dehydrated your chazer and turned it into a pot, and it's so hard that it doesn't at all become lach again.
So
then we would say, okay, maybe that's a kosher pot, even though it's made out of chazer, right? So essentially, I think conceptually, that's basically how they're looking at it. They're saying, yeah, it's true, part of this pan is made out of chazer. But okay, there's nothing, there's no blios left after you've done hagala. So if you made your pan out of chazer, then you would do hagala on the pan, and that would be a kosher pan. That's sort of what they're saying. Okay. Fine. When kashering, as we mentioned before, you have to get rid of all be'en, and therefore if there are charitzin or the like, they have to be cleaned out. If they can't be cleaned out, we'll assume that through normal usage, let's say it's for chametz, some be'en got into it. So the only option is libun. You could do libun kal, as we said. You could do localized libun on the place where the crack is, like by putting a coal on that place. Another option that some poskim suggest, you could take a look at the Dirshu note 23, is to be pogem it. If you spray bleach into this crack and are confident that any mamashas that's there is nifsal me'achilas kalev, for Pesach you need nifsal me'achilas kalev, so then theoretically that should be sufficient. Stam, that's a good Eitzah for cleaning for Pesach, not so much for Kalim. If you have a crack in the back of your dining room chair and you're concerned, maybe, you know, where like the cushion meets the wood, so you take a toothpick and you try to get out, great, but you can't get everything out, there's still some amashas there, so you spray it with cleaner or the like, then even if there are some crumbs left that you couldn't get out, so those crumbs would be pugum.
Yeah,
Well, it's heter.
Right.
It's also, you're not eating it. Meaning to say, you're not planning to eat the crumbs from the crack behind your chair. And you have no interest anyway in this crack in the pan or the like. So I think we would be makel, wouldn't be considered bittul as v'chatchila. Okay. Another eitza that one could do with hagala, if it's a very big pan, for example, is you could do hagala l'chatzayin. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Sif Yud Aleph. So you dip half of it into the pot, and then you take it out, and you dip the other half in. In this sense, it's different than Tefillas Kelim. In Tefillas Kelim, as we'll see next week, Bezras Hashem, the entire kli has to be in the mikvah at once. And that's because it's tara b'mikvah. Just like if a woman is immersing in the mikvah, and even one hair is out of the mikvah, so we say she's not in the mikvah. But when it comes to Hechsher Kelim, where we're simply trying to remove the blios, so then there is no problem. Of course, you have to make sure that the water reaches all areas of the kli. This is problematic if you're trying to do Hagala without Shishim Bizman Isser, but assuming you're kashering in a normal way, it's no problem. Thus, the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Dalet of Tafnun Beis writes that if you're holding your kli with tongs or pliers or the like, you have to make sure to move it, because if you dip your kli into the Hagala water in tongs, so the area being gripped by the tongs will not be surrounded by roschin. And therefore, you have two pairs of tongs, or you stick it in twice to solve that problem. Likewise, if you think that you can kasher a microwave, and you think that you can kasher the glass of the microwave as well, we discussed earlier the various positions on that, but if one is being lenient, so when you're boiling the water to create the zeya on the tray, you have to do it twice, because there won't be hechsher on the area where the cup is the first time. Anyway, as we said, if you wanted to kasher the tray, one would want to do hagala on the tray and not just rely on the zeya to kasher the tray. Maybe the zeya for the rest, but the tray you would probably want to do hagala, because it's like a kli rishon al ha'esh. Okay. The Mishnah Brura suggests that because of this concern, it's better to kasher in a basket as opposed to a pliers, because that would avoid this problem. Even a basket, there's a problem, potential problem. What's the problem with the basket? If you put a heavy kli on a basket and it weighs down on the basket, so when you put the basket into the hagala pot, there will be no hefsek between the basket and the kli. So the way to solve this problem is to put the basket in first and then drop your kli into the basket, and then you know it will be surrounded. Now, likewise, when it comes to these halachos, that's why you also should not be tovel too many kelim at once, or one on top of each other. Why? Because if they're one on top of each other, so again, the hagala water might not reach all the parts of the kli, and all parts of the kli need to be exposed. Now here we are more machmir for Hagala than Tefillas Kelim. Why is that? When it comes to Tefillas Kelim, we'll see the details of this halacha is actually a big machlokas between the Shach and the Gra and the Mechaber and the Rama, but Mikar Ikar Hadin, all you really need, you could put a bunch of Kelim in and shake it around a little bit. All you need is a small amount of moisture, and then it's going to be considered surrounded by the mikveh water, or mechuber to the mikveh water, and that will suffice. Again, there are chumras here, but that's Ikar HaDin. Whereas when it comes to Hagala, that's insufficient. Why? Because it's not enough there for there to be, let's say, this thin layer of moisture, let's say, tofeach. So for the pashtus, for mikveh, that's sufficient. As long as it's wet all around, then that's enough. So it could be that when you put it in the basket, and you put the basket in the mikveh, then it will be wet all around. Whereas when it comes to Hagala, it needs to be surrounded by roschin for the water, for the hot water, to draw out the blios. And that requires a more substantial interaction with the water than simply moisture. And therefore, the dinim of Hagala are more chamor in this respect, similar, but more chamor in this respect than Tefillas Kelim.
I was tumbling like a bunch of
When we do tefillos kelim, we'll do the...
I mean, sorry, if I was a bunch of like forks.
Right.
So if you...
Yes, you should drop one at a time, then it's totally fine. Okay. And so, right,
just
when...
Just not to put them all in at the same time.
Right. There's two reasons actually also, but yeah. One other thing when doing that is you have to make sure that the boil is maintained.
Right.
And if you dump them all in at once, then it'll go below, and then they're at the bottom and they're on top of each other, so they weren't exposed. So when kashering silverware, the way to do it is to drop one piece at a time. You don't have to, and assuming that as long as the boil remains, then that's fine. Okay. In Sif Gimel, in Taf Nun Beis, it says, oh, that's what we just did. Fine. Okay. Sif Vav, in Taf Nun Beis. Let's say you have a big kli that that can't fit in a bigger kli. So how do you kosher such a pot? So the Shulchan Aruch gives two options. One option is based off of the Gemara that says you make a gedanfa. What exactly is that? You take a tit, or for Pesach you would use tit. For the rest of the year you might use dough. Dough is not very helpful for kashering for Pesach. And this sort of creates a rim around the outside of the pot, making the pot a little higher. And therefore, there will be nitzotzos that go on the tip of the pot, and it'll kasher the pot that way. And the Gemara says, Kabolo kach polto, just like the top of the pot absorbed through nitzotzos, so too it's kashered through nitzotzos. Without this, even though there might be some nitzotzos, you don't know that there would be nitzotzos in all places. So therefore, this is necessary to kasher such a pot. Alternatively, the Rishonim come up with an alternative method, which is Evan Melubenes. You take a stone or a piece of metal or something else, and you heat it up in the oven or on the fire, and it gets really, really hot. And then you drop it into the pot. Now, this actually will accomplish two things. One is that it will cause the pot to boil over, so the top of the pot will definitely be koshered. Why does it need to be hot? Because if you put something cold in, it might bring it below boiling. But the second, and this is actually the reason that the Shulchan Aruch says, is that putting the hot thing in will cause it to boil more furiously, and that will cause the top of the pot to be koshered. Not all Rishonim accept that this idea of an Evan Melubenes, or sticking a torch in, if you prefer that method, works. The Ritva Psachim says maybe it doesn't, and he says, because after all, the Gemara, when it mentions this idea of the Gedanfa, the Gemara praises Rav Akavya, whose idea it was, ah, man chachem kulei hai, what a brilliant invention that he came up with this idea. Well, if all you needed is an Evan Melubenes, so then, you know, what's the big deal? What's the big deal of Rav Akavya's suggestion? Well, why wouldn't Evan Melubenes work? Because maybe it only boils over for 1 second, and that's insufficient. Now, this brings us back to the Rishonim, Machlokas Rishonim, we discussed yesterday, as to whether the Haggalah has to take place for a sustained period of time or just for a moment. If you think that it needs a more sustained period of time, so then it's reasonable to say, well, the half a second where it actually boils over after you drop your Evan Melubenes is insufficient. Now, the truth is, the way the Shulchan Aruch says it, it's not as much of a problem because it doesn't kosher it by boiling over, but by making it boil more furiously. But even that's only maybe just a half a second, and therefore some Rishonim don't like this, but we accept it, and l'halach, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Sunday night I was at a chasen. I was sitting next to someone who is an OU mashgiach. So I asked him, he said he's going to a plant after the chasana. You know, they have to kasher. He says they kasher usually on Sunday nights in the middle of the night. Why? Because you want it to be Eino Ben Yomo. So assuming the factory closes for the weekend, that's the best time, and the factory opens up bright and early Monday morning, so the best time to kasher. That's why most people kasher, like when you, for Pesach, one of the times people like to kasher is on Motzai Shabbos. Why? Because you didn't, you know, nothing was used all over Shabbos. So anyway, so he was off to do a midnight kashering on Sunday night, so he told me he told me all the procedures. So one of the things was this big, giant pot. like a really big pot, like a, you know, 500 gallon pot. So so the question is, how exactly do you do it? So Gdanfa isn't such a good solution, and Evan Melubenes isn't such a good solution either, because you don't actually empty out the pot when you have a pot that weighs, you know, 5,000 pounds or whatever it is. So it doesn't, it's not like you pick it up and dump it out. There are pipes coming out from the bottom that open and close, and that's how the contents of the pot are removed. So how do you kosher it, I asked him. So I was hoping he would say, oh, we like stick a blowtorch in or something, but no such luck. He says, oh, well, the pot's actually on a little bit of swivels, so we just shake it up all around, and then that causes the water to go over all the rims. So so there are other methods that could be used. You could have questioned this as well, much like the Ritva questions Evan Lubenes, but the Pasha Pshat is it should work, because you'll make sure that it overflows, and that's sufficient.
If a pot got answered by some iser
from the outside?
From the outside.
Okay,
yeah.
Good question. So let's talk about that right now. So what you see from the whole discussion of the Gdanfa and the like or is that we're not really concerned with the outside of the pot, right? We're not worried about the outside of the pot. Now, why is that? So maybe you'll say because it didn't absorb anything from the outside of the pot. Because we know that if something does get absorbed from the outside of the pot, it needs to be kashered, right? We saw that in Siman Sadi Beis. And we say that is true even in a case where the food doesn't need to be kashered, right? I mean, where the food would remain kosher. Let's say Kenegra Rotev, we paskin that the pot still needs to be kashered. So why not? So if you take a look at the Magen Avram, he quotes the Maharil. This is in Tafnun base, on this halacha, on the Sifvav. And the Maril writes that if you have a kli that you use as a ladle, let's imagine it's a small pot, then you sometimes dip the small pot into the bigger pot to remove some things. So then, in fact, you do have to kosher the outside of the pot, and you would do this through hagala, through sticking the small pot into the big pot. And for this, a gedanfa or an Evan Lubenis won't work. So what emerges then is the halacha is that if you do use the outside of the pot, if the outside of the pot is exposed to kosher food, then you do need to kosher it. And the only way then to kosher such a pot without the libun is actually to stick it inside a bigger pot. So this doesn't work for a big pot, but it's usually not a problem because you don't do this with a big pot. Any type of pot that you're going to use like a ladle is a pot that will fit into a bigger pot. But that's the halacha. So apparently, we're not really concerned about spills and splatters, meaning to say that min hastam, at the very least, it's assuming it's a pot that you don't use as a ladle as well, then you just do hagal on the inside, and you do your gedanfa, your Evan Melubenes, and that's fine. You don't have to worry about the outside. You don't have to ensure, for example, that the water spills over all of the outside. That would be the halacha. Now, why is this? Either because we're not choshesh that something went on the outside, or we say, no, well, even if something did once or twice splatter on the outside of the pot, which certainly happens, we assume that anything that is going to come out will have come out through Hagala, and if it doesn't come out through Hagala, well, it's not going to come out ever. In other words, it's not like a kli cheres where, again, we have this slow release idea, that, well, some of it came out this time, and more will come out next time, and more will come out the next time. No. When it comes to kli shetef, we assume that it gets everything, or at least, if it didn't get everything, they're never going to come out. So therefore, when it comes to the pot that you use as a ladle, there's still a concern, because maybe not everything came out from the outside rim, and when I dip this pot in and use it again as a ladle, the outside blios will go into my kosher food. But if it's a pot that I never use it as a ladle, so I'll say, I don't care. Naniach that there's some chametz blios that remained in the external surface, right? If they didn't come out already, they're never going to come out. And therefore it would be okay. Derech agav, if you want to use an Evan Melubenes, so kasher your pot using an Evan Melubenes, so it's somewhat of a, you know, it's a little dangerous, not so easy. After all, you have to hold this heavy stone with tongs that weigh, you know, it's 500 degrees. So there's a very simple solution to do this, and it's really very easy. What you do is you take a smaller saucepan, let's say, and you put water in it and you boil that water, right? Now that pot is very hot and it has a handle on it, it's easy to touch. So then you pick it up and you just dip it into your big pan, right? And then the big pan will overflow, come down, and it takes 2 seconds, and it's very, very easy, and it doesn't make a big, obviously some water will spill, but it doesn't make a big mess. It's not dangerous, nothing is going to go, it's a controlled lowering, it's not a random drop. I saw that idea, by the way, on if you look at the CRC website, they have two videos on practical Haggalah suggestions, so that's how, that's where I got that idea from. Okay. One is on, like, for the Balabatim, and one is like with David Cohen talking about more interesting questions. So another interesting point that is that comes up at the end of the towards the end of Siman Tufnun Beis is how does it matter how the water is heated? So I would have thought it doesn't matter. Boiling water is boiling water. However, the Beis Yosef quotes the Orchos Chaim that if you have chamei tveria, dinan keroschin l'inyan b'liya, aval ein magilin besochan, afilu dvarm shedino b'kli sheni, l'fi she'enan toldos ha'or. V'amru razal kebolo kacholto. Now, I don't know what the science of this is, but the idea is that the blios through toldos ha'or is somehow different than blios of other means of water being heated up, and therefore, one should not do Haggalah in water heated in Chamei Tveria. So we don't have too much Chamei Tveria, but this is relevant for, let's say, an induction heater or water you heat up in a microwave. Let's say you want a kasher, a single spoon. You trafed up one of your spoons by accident, so you figure instead of boiling up a pot of water, especially since it was only, I'll just heat up a little container of or bowl of water in the microwave and bring it to a boil, and then I'll do tefillah on my spoon in that. Or maybe if I need a kasher through Eroi, especially if it's a smaller area, it's much quicker and easier to just heat it up in the microwave. So Poskim say, who's to wait a second? That's not told us haor. So therefore, if it only became unkosher in the microwave, so then kabola kachpoto, that'll be fine. But if it became non-kosher through toldos ha'or, then you can't kosher it through through the microwave water, microwave heated water. Yeah.
Doesn't the Gemara call chamei tveria toldos ha'or?
Ah, that's a suffix, no? In a Gemara. That's the from the fire in Gehenna.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we end up as a suffix, right?
Yeah, it's a suffix.
Yeah. So we're choshish. Okay. Fine. Okay. How do you kosher tables and counters? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simin Taf Nun Beis, Saf Nun Aleph, sorry, Sif Chaf, that Shulchano Shemishtamshin Bahem Kol Hashana L'chametz Tzarech Laros Alein Roschen. You need to kosher your tables with Eroi. Maybe they became unkosher through Eroi. Kosher them through Eroi. Seems pretty straightforward. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Marivayil, and also earlier sources quote this. That you need to do Evan Milubenis. Now, what is the reason for that? This is also, the Beis Yosef quotes this from the Hagos Maimonios, Lefamim Nofel Hashem Pashtida. Oh, it's Chok Yaakov that quotes the Marivayil, sorry. It's Chok Yaakov Nun Hei. And the idea is as follows. This is basically a application of the Maharshal. Remember, the Maharshal said that Davar Gush has the din of a kli rishon. So if you drop, I don't know, a piece of potato kugel on your table, so the potato kugel has a din of kli rishon, and since it was boleya from a kli rishon, iroi kli rishon will not be sufficient to kosher it. And we saw that even the rest of the year, l'chumra, the shachan atazar choshers for the marshal, l'chatchil at least, it seems like for Pesach, we're even more machmir. The Mishnah Berurah says we quote the Marivayel. Even Rabbi Willig, who, as we've noted throughout the year, has been relatively mako, not very concerned about Chita's Marshal for Davar Gush, said that for Pesach, we try to be machmir, following the Mishnah Berurah. Now, therefore, if you want to kosher your table and your choshish for this view, the only way to do it is an Evan Milubenes. Well, how does an Evan Milubenes work? So the way that Taz explains it is that when you put your Evan Milubenes, you do Iroi, and your Evan Milubenes will boil the water that's on the counter. So now it will be boiling water, right? Not just Iroi, but it's boiled on the counter. You sort of turn your counter into a Kli Rishon. Imagine one way to imagine it is that the Evan Milubenes is like Eish, right? That causes the water to boil. It'll be equivalent to a Kli Rishon. And this will kosher your table. It will kosher your counter. I'm told that nowadays you can get an Evan Milubenes with a handle on it. Koshering with an Evan Milubenes is very tedious. It's hard. But basically, what is this? This is a brick with a handle. Obviously, the handle is hot, so you'll need to use a glove. But you put your brick into the oven. You heat your oven for a while at a high temperature. Now you take your brick out of the oven. Your brick is, 400 degrees, just like your experiment yesterday with the pot, right? You could really use a pot for your Evan Milubenes, theoretically, that you heat it up in the oven. The problem is that the surface area is so large and it doesn't retain its heat for very long that it won't be a very effective Evan Milubenes. Whereas if you heat up something that's very, very dense, like a brick, or Rabbi Schwartz told me he uses an old deadbolt lock, which is a very dense piece of metal, so that basically will retain its heat for a substantial, for longer, and cause all the water on your counter to boil. There are other tricks of the trade. Some people, if they're makbid to kosher their counter with an Evan Milubenes, will use an iron, make sure you don't get electrocuted. In industrial kosherus, they have like a steamers. Now, some people have steamers like to take the wrinkles out of their suit. Those usually won't, you can't use steam to kosher, as we've seen. But if you have a really intense steamer, so then so much steam comes out that it boils upon impact. The water forms and it boils upon impact. So that's another way to basically get the equivalent of an Evan Milubenes. There are all sorts of tricks of the trade. We'll talk about in just 1 minute whether this is something that you really need to do. Now, what about b'dievet if you didn't do it? Let's say you koshered al yidei iroi and you didn't use an Evan Milubenes. So the prima gadim is machmir shalob makom hafsid miruba. The Mishnah Berurah Sifkatan Kuf Yodalad says it's mutter because Rov Tashmisho is Eino B'davar Gush. And as we said before, B'diavad, you could be Somech on Rov Tashmisho. Most of my counter and table usage is certainly worst case scenario, Iroi. The truth is it's Rov Tashmisho Betzonin probably, or not even food. But so that is B'diavad, that's the halacha. The Magen Avram quotes the Darkei Moshe, that you don't need to, in addition, put a daf, some type of barrier, on top of your table or counter. But the Maril says you should leave a smartut even after Haggalah. And the Magen Avraham writes, V'chei Noagim, D'shema yesh k'tzas chametz be'ed. So if you ask the Magen Avraham, what's the minhag of kashering your table? You do Iroi plus Evan Milubenes plus Smartut. Wow, that looks like a lot. Many poskim in Eretz Yisrael, if you look at the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah, seem to have this practice. They said you should kosher your countertops and then cover your countertops. This seems to be very big chumrah. If you cover them, why do you need to kosher them? The question is, do you also need to cover them if you do kosher them? So the Mishnah Berurah writes, Avel b'shulchanos pshutin ein lahachmir. The concern, the reason for the covering, like we said, is maybe there is a little bit of be'en that remains. Well, that makes sense if you have cracks or the like. But let's say you have a granite countertop. Your granite countertop is totally smooth. There's certainly no, assuming that there's no cracks or the like, there's no be'en left in it. If you did have a crack, then that crack should be covered. But the area, most of the area where there's no crack, or the whole area where there's no crack, so that could be koshered without covering. So when it comes to koshering your counters, for our tables, you could do this for the tables. Most people don't bother doing this for the tables. They simply cover the tables. And like we said, most poskim are makel that if you cover with a good covering, even though you don't count, you don't kosher, it's okay. So the tablecloth is a covering. So you're concerned maybe things will go through the tablecloth. If it's a cloth tablecloth, something could go through. So you cover it with a plastic tablecloth underneath, and then you clean, obviously do a good job wiping down your table, cleaning off your table, put a plastic tablecloth on top of that if you want, and then you put your Pesach cloth tablecloth, and that's enough for tables. But what about counters? You don't want to have plastic tablecloth on your counter. So the easiest option is to just clean them and cover them. What about koshering them? So there's three questions you have to ask. Number one, you have to ask is, can you kosher the countertop? Well, that will depend on what it's made out of. If it's made out of stone, so we saw the Shulchan Aruch says, you're allowed to kosher stone. Some opinions will say, one second, not so fast, because many stone countertops are covered with a sealant. What's the sealant? The sealant is like plastic. And if you're machmir not to kosher plastic for Pesach, so therefore, they'll say that you can't kosher your countertop for Pesach because of the sealant. Others are makel, either because we saw many poskim say that plastic can be koshered for Pesach, and moreover, we'll see in a moment that one could make a very strong case that you don't even have to kosher your countertops in the first place. What about synthetic counters, like our counters in the Heights? So they might look like granite to the untrained eye, but in fact, they're just plastic laminate on top of particle board. So what's the halacha? So again, if you're makel to kosher plastic, then it would be okay. If you're machmir, then presumably you could not kosher these. Though again, as we'll see in a moment, there are tzadim lahakel if you for counters in general, which you might say, well, I'll be mitzvah if the tzadim lahakel, we'll mention them in a minute, plus the poskim who say you could kosher plastic. If your countertop is made out of wood, so that's something becoming more popular now, butcher block counters or wood surface counters, those probably can't be koshered for Pesach because of the cracks and crevices and scratches and the like. Again, theoretically, wood can be koshered, but you're probably not going to want to sand down your countertops for Pesach. Some materials like cement or cheres, or like my house growing up, we had tile counters, so tile counters can't be koshered. So some things can't be koshered. And all the various Pesach guides, though they have different answers, of course, but the CRC and the Starkey and the like have details, can you do your which counters. But more or less, it falls into those rules. If it's either it's going to be a type of cheres, porcelain, cement, or the like, where we won't kosher it, or it's going to be a stone which you can kosher, or it's going to be synthetic like plastic or formica or the like, which will be totally in that shaila. One shaila people talk about is a quartz resin. It's meant to look like granite. Again, many poskim are makel. Fine. Now, so that's question number one. Can you kosher it? Question number two is, how do you kosher it? So again, we saw here that the Shulchan Aruch says with Iroi, the Mishnah Berurah says you should do Evan Milubanes. And finally, the third question is, you have to cover it after koshering it. And then we saw that as long as it's smooth, you shouldn't have to cover it after you kosher it. Now, what was this fascinating tzad lahakel that I said for koshering countertops? So Rav Willig thinks you don't have to kosher countertops. He pointed out that his wife does kosher or cover her countertop. His wife won't listen to him. He says, nobody listens to me about this. So why don't you have to kosher a countertop? Doesn't the Shulchan Aruch say that you have to kosher a shulchan? The answer is that we don't eat off our countertops. We don't put food on our countertops, and we don't eat off our countertops. And therefore, even though in theory, Rav Willig thinks you should be machmir for the Mishnah Berurah to use Evan Milubenes on a shulchan, meaning to say, that's when you eat off the shulchan or you eat off the countertop, as opposed to us, we don't eat off our countertops. Now, it's a bit of a chiddush because food does fall on your counters every so often, and then you do eat it. You know, I don't think every time an apple falls on my counter, I throw it out. But you'll say, okay, but that's fine, that's cold. What are you worried about? The question is, do you put hot food on your countertops? The answer is you don't. Now, sometimes what about if it falls? So you're going to get off any ban, obviously, right? So you don't have to worry about any ban. What about if it sometimes falls? So so here, well, except don't make sure you don't eat any hot food off your countertop on Pesach. So I thought maybe, you know, if you treat your countertop as treif the whole year, right? Some people have big kitchens with lots of countertops, and they assume their countertops are kosher. They have a milchik counter and a fleishik counter and a parv counter, and then if things fall, so they would eat it. But if you treat your countertop as a treif, and therefore you would never eat food off your counter, so then maybe you don't have to be kosher, so you'll do it on Pesach. There is another concern, which is that, let's say there's some moisture and you put a hot pot on the counter, right? I take a pot off the stove and I put it directly on my counter. And let's assume, as is often the case, the countertop is wet. So that should be a problem, right, if you haven't koshered your countertop. So again, Rav Willig would presumably say, I didn't ask him this point, but he would say, no, don't put, if it's dry, you wouldn't have to worry, but probably you shouldn't put hot pots on your counter either. Now, a lot of people don't do that all the year time, especially if your countertop's made out of plastic, or, again, if you treat your countertop as treif, as many of us do in the Heights here, because there's not enough room to have a milchik counter and a fleishik counter and a parv counter and the like, so you basically treat your countertop as treif. So the whole year, you'll always use a trivet, or a cutting board, or a towel, or something like that, before you put your hot pot of chicken soup on your counter, or at the very least, you'll make sure it's dry. So if you're zahir to do this the whole year, Rav Willig thinks you don't have to be choshesh that all of a sudden on Pesach, you'll do what you're not used to doing. And therefore, strictly speaking, you don't have to kasher. Now, that being the case, even if one does want to kasher your countertops, that might be a strong sniff to say, okay, well, I'm not going to bother with Evan Hilubenes, which is indeed a very difficult thing, because anyway, the pashtus is that I don't need Evan Hilubenes. And that's just the chumrah. And it doesn't aser b'diavet if you don't do it, like we saw in the Mishnah Brura. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to make sure that I'm not going to eat any hot food that's a gush that fell on my countertop and the like. I don't do that anyway. It's a far-fetched chance and the like. So basically, to rely on Eroi plus Rav Willig, or maybe to allow for the koshering of plastic plus Rav Willig, is not a bad sniff. Happens to be that even when you're doing Eroi, to kosher a countertop is quite a chore, because you want to get a direct hit from the Eroi pot on all the surfaces of the counter, and that could take quite a while and make a big mess. I'm not sure why, it's very easy to, we get a counter of corrugated plastic, and just cover the countertop, and it takes 1 minute, and then it's koshered. You don't have to worry about it. Then you don't have to kosher it. Clean it, put this, it's like maybe a centimeter thick. It's very cheap to buy. It won't, no liquid or moisture will go through it. And it's easy, it's light. I think some people like to kosher it because they want, they have this fancy granite countertops. They want their kitchen to look nice over Pesach as well. It doesn't look as nice if it has corrugated plastic on it. But in terms of convenience, it's very useful. Yeah?
We would require the Eroi to hit directly because we're cautious for the shah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we would. Some people do Eroi plus when they kosher with with Iroi for Pesach. What they do is they use a kumkum that and pour from the kumkum. Why is that? That's like a kumkum with an Evan Milubenis in it, and especially if you have it plugged in and on while you're doing it. So if you learn like that Chazanish, then it's Kli Rishon. But as we noted at the time, the Chazanish is against the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch says you could kasher with Iroi for the pot that boils over, even though it's still connected. But if you want like an easy additional chumrah, so you have that, if you want to do that. Yeah.
When you do an Evan Milubenis,
Before I forget. Basically, the same issue, we'll talk a little bit more about it, is going to be true with sinks. Meaning to say, koshering your sink, so do you need Iroi or Evan Milubenis? Right? So if you're choshish for the Marivile, so then you would say, in the Mishnah Berurah, you would say you need an Evan Milubenis for your sink. Why? Sometimes Dafer Gush falls on your sink. Let's say you're straining noodles, right? And some spaghetti falls onto your sink. So that's chametz, gush, and therefore Iroi would be insufficient. Whereas according to the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, Iroi would work for your sink. I'll tell you after I take your question about what Rav Willig says about kashering sinks in a moment. But Iroi for a sink. So if you're going to kasher with Iroi for your sink only, and then the minhag on Pesach is to, at the very least, use a grate, or one of those, what do you call them? Grate, I guess. Rack, that's it. A rack. Some people are machmir to use dafka basin for this reason, because they're choshe for Evan Milubenis. Others say no, like we talked about before when we did a bas v'chalav about a sink, you use a rack. And therefore, when you use your rack, so basically your kalim aren't touching the bottom of the sink, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem. The worst, you know, that would solve that problem. Alternatively, you could use an Evan Milubenis. Evan Milubenis for sink is much easier than Evan Milubenis for counter. Here all you have to do is dump it into the sink. So Rabbi Schwartz uses that, his deadbolt. So he puts it in the oven, heats it up for a while. He fills up his sink halfway. He doesn't fill it up the whole way because then it won't boil. It's not hot enough. You need too many Evan and Milubenis. But he fills up his sink about halfway, and he takes the Evan Milubin, he dumps it in, starts boiling, and then now he's kashered in a Kli Rishon, basically. And then for the upper sides of the sink, so that he's Sameich on Iroi, because anyway, you know, there's probably not a Dover Gush that hit that, and even if it did, your Kalim, so that's good enough. We'll talk about the faucet in a moment. Yeah.
When you do Evan Milubenis on your counter, so you don't need Iroi, correct?
Well, you'll probably want to use Iroi because you'll want to make sure that the water is as hot as you could get it before it gets in contact with the Evan Milubenis, so that the Evan Milubenis only has to kick it up a little bit. Also, we find that we treat Evan Milubenis as a Kli Rishon only when requiring a Kli Rishon is a Chumrah. If it's Mikra Din, so we're not Machmir. So we want you, the Poskim, that recommend doing this, that you want to do both Iroi and Evan Milubenis, because that way Iroi certainly works probably Mikra Din, and then Evan Milubenis is the Chumrah. However, the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah point out you don't have to make sure the Evan Milubenis touches every single inch of the countertop, just has to cause the water to boil on the countertop.
And are there poskim that I thought I heard from even why you poskim that you can, to
cash
your countertops, you can just do
Iroi. Yeah. According to your will, you don't even need to do Iroi. So Kosh can't Iroi works. Okay. Yeah. I think Rav Shechter, though, is Machmir. Okay. I believe. Based off of the Mishnah Berurah. Yeah.
How do you actually do it? Just like myself. And
let's say you have the kind with the handles. It's very easy.
So you just stick it
you do Iroi, and then yeah, you pen like iron your counter. You just have to do it slow enough so your
counter has your hot water.
Right. You don't have to mamish like with vasachas. You don't want to get burnt,
yeah.
But you're causing the water that's been poured on your countertop to boil through the...
And even though, meaning from, if it's from Erie, it's not necessarily spending so much time touching the edible Venice. It's going to go on
okay,
and splash
but you,
off.
You, it's still enough to, you'll see it boil.
Yeah, I understand in the case with the sink.
Right,
that,
it's still...
Know, it's in the...
Right, there's still enough of an accumulation. That might be another reason why you want to also make sure you've done Eroi, but that there's still enough accumulated water for the effect to be had. Uh-huh. Obviously, it should be Ein HaBenyomo, because otherwise it'll just go right back in, right?
Does everyone agree that the steamer works?
Everybody would agree that the steamer works as long as it's causing the water to boil. Now, if the steamer is just emitting steam, it won't work. That's what Rav Moshe writes in his Tshuva about steam, that steam doesn't kasher, but if the steam forms, you know, causes water to be there, and then that water boils. So in the industrial steamers, at least, they're powerful enough. Let's say it's steam that's 300 degrees. So when that steam hits the counter, it'll turn into water that boils. It's true only for a second or two before it gets too cold, but that'll be enough. Okay. This is only when we're talking about shulchanos and tevos shematznim behen ochel, but it wouldn't be true if not matznim ben ochel. Like the Magen Avraham Tafnun Aleph Lamed Ches points out, a shematznim ben ochel aval stam tevos ein srichin hagala. So therefore, you don't really need to kosher your refrigerator, shelves, or your shelves in your drawers in this kitchen, or your cabinet drawer shelves. Why not? Because nobody ever does Eroi Kli Rishon or Davar Gush Yatzo lettuce bow on the, you know, in their drawer or on their cabinets, right? I think usually before you put the pot into the counter, into the cabinet, assuming it's cold already. Even in a refrigerator, sometimes you put pots into a refrigerator. So if you actually put pots into the refrigerator that are still Yatzo lettuce bow, then you might, but I don't think that's the normal practice. You wait for it to cool down a little before you put the pot into the refrigerator. So therefore, all you'd need, technically speaking, for a refrigerator, for cabinets, is to clean it very well, making sure that you got rid of any ban, any crumbs, and the like, and that's sufficient. Many people, you know, when I told this to my wife, she didn't need to cover the refrigerator shelves. She like looked at me as though I was crazy, and she did. There's nothing wrong with it, and if you're concerned that it's hard to clean it perfectly well and you might have missed something, so then it's probably advisable because there is food there. So it's not a terrible idea, but strictly speaking, it's not necessary. Now, what about... what about candles? So, we talked earlier, a couple days ago, about the importance with handles, that if there's a crack between the handle and the pot, you have to make sure that you get rid of the mamashos that might have fallen into the crack, either by removing the handle and cleaning it off and putting it back on. I did that once, and it ended up quite wobbly the second time. It was wobbly the first time, but it was even more wobbly after I returned it. Alternatively, we suggested using Liban Kal to get rid of any mamashos. That's, an easier idea to get rid of any mamashos. Now, leaving that issue aside, what about the koshering of the actual handle itself? Does a handle need to be koshered? So there are two sugyos that are relevant here. And, what is Jake doing calling in the middle of shir? Does he think he's in Shavuot Brachos? Oh, yes. He doesn't think they're sheer. Ah, now he's going to hear. Okay, we'll call him. We'll call back afterwards. So, So, what about handles? Do handles need to be koshered? So, there are two types, two sugyas, as we said. The first sugya, which we've already done when we did Barsha B'chala, but we'll briefly review, is the Gemara in Zvachim Tzadi Vav Amid Beis. The Gemara asks, Bishal B'miktsas Kli, does it need Marika V'shtifa B'kol HaKli, or not? And then, even if you say that it does for Kadshim, which is the conclusion, does that apply to Truma or not? And the simple reading of the Gemara, the conclusion, though again, we saw not everybody accepts this simple reading, but the simple reading of the Gemara's conclusion is that this is dafka for kachim and not for truma. Now, if you take a look at the Rashba, Taras Abayis Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph, he writes that they only pottered truma, but not chulin. For chulin, you need to be machshir the entire kli. So what that means is that if I use the kli, I only used it halfway up, I know. Still, I have to do hagala on the whole kli. And likewise, this is the relevance to a handle, even though I didn't put food on the, I didn't cook food in the handle, but the blios, why do you have to kasher the top of the pot even though you only use the bottom of the pot? Because the blios travel, they're mefapea within the walls to the top part of the pot. Likewise, they could be mefapea from the walls of the pot to the handle. Let's assume for a moment that the handle is mechubar. It's a pot that's a miksha achas taseh, so it's actually connected. We'll talk about what if it's a separate handle. So then there would be a concern, according to the Rashba, that the blios travel to the handle. Now, I'll say, okay. So therefore, according to the Rashba, you would definitely need to kosher the handles. And moreover, the Rashba says that the Haggalah that you do for the pot won't work for the handles. Just like Bishel B'miktas Kli Ta'un Miriko Shtifa B'Kala Kli, or Ta'un Haggalah B'Kala Kli, so too, you need to do Haggalah on the handles. And it's not just the view of the Rashba. The Beis Yosef in Simen Kuf Chaf Aleph writes that the Rush in Avodah Zarah, Parakei Simen Lamed Dalet, also learns like the Rashba. However, so that's opinion number one. Opinion number two is the Ra'ah, who disagrees with that Rashba. And he says, no, even Chulin, we paskin like Truma, Bishel B'miktsas Kli, you only need to do Haggalah B'miktsas Kli. Why is it that it works? Kibo lo kach polto. After all, how did the blios get into the handle of this pot, or to the top of the pot? Through being mifapea. So just like they were mifapea into the handle, they'll be mifapea out of the handle when you do your hagala. Same way it goes in, so too it goes out. Now, this might only be true for hagala and not libun. Why? Because hagala, we say kabolo kach polto. Libun might work only through the blios being nisraf b'mekoman. So therefore, in the area that's exposed to the libun, let's say you use a blowtorch or coals, so that area will be koshered, but the handle will retain its blios of iser, or of chametz. But if you did hagalah, so then, as long as you did hagalah in all the areas that were directly exposed to the food, that would be sufficient. So according to the Ra'ah, you wouldn't have to kosher your pot handles. And the Ran learns like the Ra'ah. The Tur seems like he paskins like the Ra'ah. The Shach argues even the Rush might agree to the Ra'ah. The Beis Yosef thought the Rashba was learning like, sorry, the Rush learned like the Rashba. But the Shach said no. The Rush is talking about Liban, and that's why he says it doesn't work. But if it's Haggalah, it would work. So there are a number of Rishonim in this school of thought. This is what we're calling the second school of thought. The third school of thought is quoted in the Shach, Kuf Chaf Aleph, Sif Katan Yud Zayin. This is the Maharam Milublin. And he holds the following. Until now, opinions, possibilities number one and two, both assumed that blios actually travel, are mifapeh, within the walls of the pot to the extremities. The Shach says no. Actually, when it comes to Bishol, ena blios mifapim bekulo. It's only al yidei esh that we say cham miktsas ol cham kulo. And therefore, you wouldn't need to be machshir the part of the kli that wasn't directly in contact with the food, unless, of course, you're dealing with esh. But if you're just cooking, if it's a pot, then it would be fine. So you don't have to come on to kibolo kach polto, like the Ra said. The Ra said, school thought said, yeah, you only need a kasher the part of the pot that you used, but that was because, not because the handle didn't have blios in it, it's because the Haggalah kashered the handle. According to this view, according to the Shach, you don't even need to kasher the handle in the first place. Oh. And the Shach argues that the Sefer HaTruma, if you remember from Simon Sadi Dalid, who said that Tachav Kli Chalavi, halfway in, so you only have to be Meshayer Keneged, the part of the spoon that went into the pot, as opposed to the whole thing. So the Shach said, what's the Pshat in the Sefer HaTruma? Why aren't we concerned for the Blios in the top of the spoon? Answer, because the Sefer HaTruma holds of this Chiddush, that Blios are not Mefapea within a realm of Bishul, as opposed to Tzli, within a realm of Bishul throughout the whole spoon. And if you remember, that's how the Shach was Miyashiv, the Stira between Simon Sadi Dalit and Simon Sadi Beis. And the Shach even tries to say that maybe the Rama and the Tur hold of his view. The simple reading of the Rama and the Tur is they learn like the Ra'ah, but he thinks maybe the Rama and the Tur hold of his view. He's very into this. Okay, so how do we paskin? So the Mechaber paskins like the Rashba. I'll just read you Siv Vav and Simin Kuf Chaf Aleph. Klei Matchos, Afal Pi, Sheyesh Omer Shem Nishtamesh Bo Isser B'Miktsaso Nasar Kulo, Mishem Ducha Miktsaso Cham Kulo, Aval Inyan Hechshero, Lo ala lo hechsher ad shiachsher kulo bein l'inyan hagala bein l'inyan liban. So that's the Rashba, and the Rama seems to paskin like the Ra'a. He writes haga v'dafka nishtamish bekulo avalim yadua lo shelo nishtamish rak b'miktaso kibolo lo kach polto. So kibolo kach polto sounds like the Ra'a. Again, the Shach says maybe it's the third view, and kibolo kach polto is lav dafka. Okay, and again, if you're going to learn like the Maram Metz, not the Maram Milublin, Maram Metz, so then it's this leniency only is true for Bishul, not for Tzli. The Magen Avram is Machmir. He's Choshesh that the Blios spread, for the most Machmir possible opinion. Again, it's in fitting with the Rashba, that the Blios spread but don't come out. So therefore, when I, let's say with respect to the handle, when I cook using the handle, the Blios are mefapea to the handle, but when I do Haggalah, they don't necessarily spread from the handle back into the pot. So I will have koshered the pot, but I will not have koshered the handle. Blios go one direction, or at least we're choshesh. They go one direction. That's Sifkat and Chavdal. The Mishnah Brura, Sifkat and Samach Tes, says Rov Poskim learn like the Rama, that we say Kibolo Kach Polto. So therefore, again, do you have to kasher the handle? So according to the Rashba, you would have to kasher the handle. Mitzad this. But if you learn like the Shach or the Rama, you shouldn't have to kasher the handle, according to this. Now, there are a couple of other interesting things. First of all, if you look at Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Ragan Avram, Rabbi Kiva Eger points out that this is only if the handle is miksha. In other words, the handle is not made from a separate piece of plastic or metal that was screwed on, but actually one piece with the pot. That's what we'll say Blios transfer. What about if it's made from something separate that is attached? So he says maybe here we'll say Ein Balua Yotze Belo Rotev. So the Blios in the walls of the pot will not necessarily travel into the handle of the pot. So therefore, even if you learned like the Rashba, perhaps you don't need a kasher such a handle. Not everybody agrees with this Rabbi Akiva Eger. The Radvaz in Tshuva Chelek Vav Simen Shnei Alafim Shin Ches is Note L'Hachmir, as is the Maharsham. But many are Meka like Rabbi Kiva Eger, including Rav El Yashiv, the Minchas Yaakov, and others quoted in Dirshu number 62. Okay. One other point, which we said last time, we won't get into this again, is Rabbi Akiva Eger's theory that everybody agrees to Chametz Chasul Chametz Kulo if it's actually hot, and the only time metal is distinct is when it's talking about when it's not actually hot. That's the Chiddush of Chametz Chasul Chametz Kulo. There's also a discussion, again, we'll leave it out, was the Magen Avraham just based off of Chametz Chasul Chametz Kulo and therefore only apply to metal? Or did he say for all things? He didn't mention metal, but many Achronim, like the Mishnah Berurah, seem to understand it's Dafka metal. Fine. That is the first sugya with respect to pot handles. There's a second sugya, but first let me take your question.
That there is under the handle?
In between?
In between, yeah.
So, you know, I forgot to look into this a little more. I would assume that if there's a crack, as there often is, then the answer is yes.
What do you mean by like, meaning like?
Could you see? You look with your eyes. Could a crumb of chametz fall in here? Whereas, I'll give you an example. For my pans, so our standard set of pots, there's cracks. You could clearly see chametz could fall in. Then you do have to be choshesh. On the other hand, we have a frying pan where it's also an attached handle, but it's very, very close. There's, if you look at it carefully, there's no visible crack, even though it is two things stuck together. It's a much stronger. So there, you could see that there's no possibility of there being any chametz there. So it would be Michael. I assume, in the end of the day, you'll probably treat it like we treat tlai, right? In other words, that would be a good place to learn the halachos from.
Do people if they're kashering their pots for?
You know, it's interesting. I looked at the CRC when I was curious what they would say in the CRC video. And they do the whole thing, and they show you how to kasher a pot with hand, you know, with handles and the like, and they don't mention anything about the handles. And then they say, oh yeah, you should take off your handles to get rid of the BM, like under their breath, or something like that, which is, you know. So I would think that if you have a pot with handles, really, the best way to avoid the problem is to do Liban Kal, because... and you just have to leave it in long enough that you could be confident that any ban is nisraf, and that would solve the problem, because it is a big pain to take off the handles. And I think it is, you know, it is a very reasonable shush that there's going to be ban.
What would their advice say back to Rekiva Eger that Angula Yosem is clean?
Well, I mean, there might be Rotev, but even if not, I'll read you what he says. Sha'alta mimeni alha de amrinan klimatchos chamiktsasu chamkulo iamrina nami bala miktsasu bala kulo tshuva zumachlokas ben arishonim v'chulei aval nagu ha'am k'divei ha'machmirim v'afilu kelim ha'asuyim m'shtei chatichos u'mechuber b'masmerim k'gon kelim sheyesh lahem beis yad aruch v'enu meguf ha'kli ela shu mechuber b'masmerim nagu l'hachmir u'min hagam shel Yisrael tairahu deha Sakinin me'ayalahu ulekasaihu beroschin uvekli rishon. So he doesn't answer the question. He says it's a minag, but he brings a proof from the Gemara. And we saw this Gemara. The Gemara says you need to do hagala on the handle of the knife. You could say, why do you need to do hagala and handle the knife? Now, mustama, he's assuming that the knife is a separate material. It's not just a single metal blade that includes the handle, so it's the same. It's a different. It's a separate material, and still you need to do hagala, right? So that's his proof. The Marsham also says this, but I don't think he really gives the reason. He just brings proof. Maybe there's a concern for Rotev, or maybe he thinks that once it's mechuber, so then it's not mikli al kli. It's like a single kli. And therefore they can be transferred. Okay. The second sugya relating to handles is the Gemara in Psachim on Lamed Amid Beis. Amar Rav Huna, Breid Rav Yeshua, Eitz Parur, Magilo Beroschen Uvekli Rishon. And the Mordechai says, Afilu HaBeis Yad. So you have to be Magil, the Beis Yad of a Kli. And this is the Psach of the Shulchan Aruch, Tafnun Aleph, Sif, Yod base. Now, what's the basis for this Mordechai? So the Bach considers the matter. And he says, well, maybe the basis of the Mordechai is this sugya of Chag Miktsas Shulchan Kula and Blios traveling. No, because we're even talking about Eitz Parur. And we don't say Chag Miktsas Shulchan Kula for wood, and still this applies. And likewise, if you look at the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, when the Shulchan Aruch says the Eftekasher handles, it doesn't say anything about metal. It doesn't say metal. So the Bach takes for granted, as does the Taz and others, Mishneh Berurah, that this whole discussion that we had based off of the first sugya of Blios traveling is only going to be shayach for metal where we say Chag Miktsas Shulchan Kula. But we don't say Blios travel in other kalim, and certainly where it isn't hot. And that being the case, so there must be another concern. The concern that the Mordechai is talking about is not based off of traveling Blios. So what is it? What's the reason? And also, the Bach proves it from another way. He says, if you think that this is based off of that first concern, the Sugyan Zvachim, so then there's a stira in the Tur, because this halacha only makes sense according to the Rashba. But remember, the Tur in Yoredeya certainly didn't pass in like the Rashba, right? The Tur held that if you do Hagalah on the main part of the Kli, the handle would be kashered, right? And yet over here, in Or HaChaim, the Torah says you need to kasher the handles. So it can't be that it's based off of the traveling Blios concern. It must be that there's a new concern. What is the new concern? That food independently reaches the handles. It's not because of the traveling Blios, but independently hitting there. How so? So various formulations are given. The Bach writes, "Kshemadichan osam lenakosan mizuamal achar tashmishan." Then it's boleya, or food splatters on it when it's in the handles, or you touch it with dirty hands, and then it gets hot, presumably, right? So basically, handles of pots are dirty. You touch them with dirty hands. They're on the stove. Food splatters. V'chule v'chule, and that's the reason why you have to kasher your pot handles. And that's what the Taz Sifkat Yud Zayin writes. The Ikar Chashash is because of Lichluch. It's not because of traveling Blios. The Ishav HaHeter, also quoted by the Darkei Moshe, Kuf Chaf Aleph Taz Zayin, says this. Good. So now, there's a number of nafkaminas between these two concerns. Nafkamina number one is if you say that the... If you say that the reason is because of Chag Miktsas Shulchan Kula, so then you'd only have to do it for Kli Matchos. But according to the second reason, you would have to do it for other forms like a wooden handle or a plastic handle. Number two is, let's say you use the Kli for Basar B'Chalav or Chametz or only once, and you were confident that nothing, no food splattered on it, you didn't touch it with dirty hands or the like, would you need a kasher the handles? If you hold of the Chag Miktsas Shulchan Kula reason, you would have to. If you hold of the dirty hand svara, then you wouldn't have to. Another nafkamina is what we just said. Would we be machalek between if the handle was two separate things that are connected or a single unit? Assuming we pass like Rabbi Kiva Eger, so you'd only have to, according to the first reason, you'd only have to kasher a handle that was a single unit with the pot. Masha Ein Kein, if you hold to the second reason, that will make a difference. Even attached handles will have to be kashered. Number four, the Raman Sif Yud Beis writes that you could kasher handles through Iroi. You don't, even though, yes, you do have to kasher handles, but it's enough to do Iroi on the handles. Well, let's think about that. What does it make sense? So now, it's based off the Ishav HaHeter. Now, the Mamar Mordechai writes that, Sifkat Yud Zayin, that if you think that the handles got dirty because of nitzotzos, right, the splatterings from another pot while it's on the fire, so then it makes sense that Iroi should work. But if you hold of the first reason, then Iroi shouldn't work. Because how did the Blios get in here? They traveled from within the pot, right? It's basically Kli Rishon. So therefore, Iroi shouldn't work. That's not so simple on two accounts. Number one is if you're concerned with the second Svara, well, why don't I be, especially if the handle gets hot, which it sometimes does if you put your Kli in the oven or if it's a metal handle. So let's say, imagine I touch my handle with dirty hands And now I put the pot into the oven, so then it absorbed directly, right? Iroi shouldn't work, even if you hold to the second school of thought. And the Magen Avraham says, even if you hold to the first school of thought, Iroi would work. Why does Iroi work? This is a very strange idea, but he says that just like it got here in a secondary way, this is Sifkat and Chafhei, so too it could be taken out in an indirect way. It's domet to Iroi, because the Bliya went mitzad letzad. Now, the problem with that theory in the Magen Avraham is the problem that the Ola Shabbos quoted by the Prima Gadim quotes, which is, one second, Iroi, we know, we paskin, only affects the klipa, right? So Iroi will kasher the outer klipa of this handle. But where are the blios in this handle? The blios are throughout, right? Because how did they get here? Through blios traveling within the walls of the pot. So Iroi would seem to be totally ineffective except for the klipa. Now, even if you say it helps with the klipa because these only came here in the secondary route, but it only affects the klipa. The Levush says Iroi works for a different reason, which might help, but it doesn't go with our normal rules, which is he says that Iroi works because since it came here in the secondary route, Eina Bliya Chazaka Kolkach Kimo Bekli, and therefore Iroi works. I don't know, but still it shouldn't affect anything outside of the klipa. Now, maybe you could say the pshat again. It sounds to me that the Ramaz L'shitaso in Sivvav, that in Yoredeya, that we paskin like the Ra, and therefore you don't need to be concerned with the internal traveling blios, the only kabolo kach palto, the only concern will be the surface blios, like the nitzotzos, and therefore for that the Iroi would work. Okay.
But it wouldn't work because...
I didn't see anyone that addressed my concern. That that you put it into the oven and then they got in, you know, directly. I don't know if I have an answer to that question. Okay. Let's go to a couple more minutes. So we talked about how you kasher a sink. Either Evan Milubenis is the best way, but most poskim allow for Iroi for the reasons that with the rack. Right, Iroi plus a rack. Rav Avadia is even more makel. He says that most poskim will say you can't kasher a porcelain sink, for example, that you would need to get a basin. He says no, you could kasher a porcelain sink. You don't even need a kasher a sink, he says, because Rov Tashmisho is ein yado saledispo, plus you use soap, plus many poskim say Iroi is kiklisheni, plus, he says something I really didn't understand. He says that haterabala, okay, but don't you still need kashering? Well, it's porcelain. He thinks you could kasher porcelain, it's haterabala, I don't know. But he throws all those in and he says, you don't really need to kasher it. And if you want to be machmir, so just do Iroi shlosha pa'amim, and that would be enough. But I don't think that's the mainstream view. So let's say you do Iroi, right? So then you just make sure that you don't eat from your sink. I don't think people do this too much, but since we're machmir for davar gush and Pesach, so your sink, where choshesh, at least l'chumra, is still chametzdik. And therefore, if you, I don't know, you're straining potatoes, right? And one of the potatoes falls out of the strainer and lands on the surface of the sink, so then... you really should not eat that potato. L'chumra. If you do, like we said, b'di'evit, it's okay. Say it's already b'di'evit, right? I don't know. A single potato, you could be cut off. But one shouldn't eat from their sink on Pesach if you only kasher ayde iroi. So then I asked him a different question. I said, okay, so let's say you kasher only a day iroi. It sounded like what Willig thought was totally fine. So you kasher only ayde iroi. So now I go ahead and I strain my potatoes on Pesach, right? So I have a strainer in the sink, and I pour the pot of potatoes. So what happens? There's a big, all the hot water hits the bottom of the sink, and there's a big plume of zeya that goes right back up. So isn't that going to trafe up my potatoes? So you'll say, no, that's kvo lo kach polto. And therefore, it's going to, we assume, since that's Iroi, it got out through Iroi. In other words, okay, fine. So what about the faucet, right? So he said, do Iroi on a faucet also. So I said, well, that will help for the top of the faucet, but what about the bottom of the faucet, right? Really, the part of the faucet sink that's chametz stick is the bottom. That's the biggest problem. Let's say I strain my spaghetti, right? So again, that's real zeya. When you strain the spaghetti, big, lots and lots of steam comes right up, and what does it do? It hits the bottom of the faucet, and that might be atzel lettuce bone. So he said, okay, so put your faucet into a clean rishon. So that's really the best thing. What I did was if you live in the Heights, it's very easy. You can just unscrew your faucet. It takes about 1 second and put it directly in the pot. But if you probably fancier sinks don't come off so easily. So then you should take your faucet and take your pot of boiling water and try to put your faucet into it, which will work for most of the faucet. Like at the base of the faucet, it won't work, but probably the base of the faucet isn't the part that's such a problem anyway. So you should try to do that. And even though, theoretically you could have pikpukim, Ray Willig thought that's far enough. Okay. One last thing. So at the end of your sink, there's an aerator. So you should kash your aerator. So it's very easy. Just put it into, take it off, unscrew it, and clean it out, and put it into a pot of boiling water. I saw that the CRC poskim thought, no, that the halacha is, and the Shulchan Aruch says that you can't kasher a nafa. Why? Because it has such small holes in it that you can never really kasher, because you can never be confident you got all the ba'ed. So they said an aerator is like that, and therefore you should get a new aerator for Pesach, or don't use an aerator on Pesach. I thought that was a bit of a chumrah, because you never actually use be'en of chametz with your aerator. The only way the aerator became not chametz lepesach is what? Through steam, right? The steam, it's not like, wheat kernels come out of your sink. So the steam, you could still kasher. I guess they think no, because maybe the steam, the zeya, sometimes makes things grimy, and you can't get the griminess out of your aerator. So therefore, for 99 cents, they recommend that you get a new aerator. But I think most people aren't makbid about this, and I don't think you can make a case that they have alma lismo. Okay, so we're not finished, but we're 98% finished. So, Be'ezus Hashem, on Monday we'll have shir on Tevilas Kalim, and we'll do the last 5 minutes of Hagalas Kalim before we start that. In terms of Tfilas Kalim, there's just one Amud of Gemara on Ein Hamad Beis and Avodah Zarah. You should see that Gemara Rashi Tosfos, and then I would go to the Beis Yosef and start with that. There are Sparim, it's just like there was the big fat Hagalas Kalim book, the same author has a slightly less fat Tfilas Kalim book. There's also Chalkas Binyamin, which is by Chalkas, is that what it's called? Yeah. We have Binyamin Cohen, the son of the Badia Shulchan, so he picked up where his father left off, and he continued, so you could use that as well. Okay. No, dear. Have a good day. Good job.